stop.
Shake, shake.
Shake, shake, and stop. Yeah, almost every stage she drops in saying stop.
I loved both of those things.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I am Nolan.
And this is episode 194. Nolan, what? This pre-show banter is for you.
Oh, I'm excited.
Ooh.
Fire Emblem Three Houses just had its second week at number one on the UK charts.
Mm-hmm.
A surprising result for a Japanese strategy RPG over there. In other places, Three Houses just lost its number one spot in Japan to Mario Maker 2, but that's not a big deal.
Makes
still
sense,
number
yeah.
two. And in North America, we don't know what we're doing with video games because it's third best-selling Switch game in July, number one being Fortnite.
Oh,
so,
gosh. I knew you were going to say that.
State of gaming. Okay.
I mean, like, you can't even really buy Fortnite, can you?
I don't know if that's a fair comparison. It's kind of a free-to-play. Like, what are they even basing that on?
What are those?
I quit.
Nolan, you're a fan of Three Houses.
Oh, goodness, yes.
You've been playing it. You've been streaming it.
Yes.
Tell us why everyone needs to play Japanese Harry Potter chess.
That's actually a really accurate description of it. And if that doesn't sound fun to you, then maybe it's not for you. But that sounds really fun to me. I think everyone should play it because it's a really quality game. And it's unlike many other games that are saturating the market right now that you're tired of. That's my quick pitch. Like, that has nothing to do with the specifics, but it's unique. And I think you should play it and keep the genre and the series alive. I don't think it's going to die, but yeah.
I just put two and two together.
What?
Like, does UK like it so much because you're literally playing as Minerva McGonagall and you're the professor of a bunch of students in a magical school of mystery?
Yeah, low-key J.K. Rowling produced the game. And no, I think just Europeans are smarter than we are and more cultured. And so you're like, Fortnite, get that trash out of my face.
Is it a romance sim and should we be embarrassed playing it?
No, yes. Yes and no.
No, it's not. And yes, we should be embarrassed.
It's the opposite. It has a romance sim mechanic, but not as bad and cringy as some of the past games. So
are you doing tea parties?
Tea parties is just, it's platonic, okay? The tea parties you can just have with anyone. But if you really, really want to marry somebody, you take them on a tea party.
Can you and your bro go on a tea party?
Yes, I've taken Caspar on tea parties many a weekend.
And y'all are just pals?
Of course, yeah, we're pals. I'm trying to I might marry Caspar. I'm playing a female character.
Kenny, do you know anything about Three Houses? Do you know anything about Fire Emblem? And do you know anything about video games? Three questions?
Yeah. Answer the three questions one more time. One at a time.
I can't answer them. You have to answer them.
Ask them one more time. I can only handle one each.
It's Three Houses, Fire Emblem video games.
Okay. I would love to only have one house.
I know that's what he's going to do to
us. Okay. You failed the first question. Fire Emblem? Question mark?
I am not good at video games. And yes, you can take me to drink tea if that's what your other question was.
What a person he is.
He is a person. Well,
we're not even sure.
Well, you've heard Nolan, he's gushed about it. Catch him on Twitch sometime this week, or there's VODs. He's been playing it, and it's a lot of fun to watch him play because he's so passionate about it and enjoys it so much. And if it's interesting to you, Harry Potter, Japanese chess, whatever the combination is, get yourself a copy and don't be embarrassed by the haters. As Taylor Swift says, shake it off. Shake, shake it off. Like in our retro game of the week, Mischief Makers.
Overview.
Mischief Makers.
Don't. You can't already. It's too early in the episode.
Why do you hate pronunciations? And why did you call me out in your first play?
Did I? I don't recall.
Yeah,
doing
shots
that.
Were fired.
Was it for the terrible pronunciation?
If you don't remember, I don't remember.
It's water under the bridge.
A 1997 side-scrolling platformer for the Nintendo 64. It was published by Enix, and this was before Square Enix merger, of course. Enix published exactly two games for the Nintendo 64. One of them was a pet raising simulator called Wonder Project J2.
I'm in.
Huh, that sounds great, actually.
And they also published this game, Mischief Makers. Enix, at the time, was known for games like Dragon Quest and Soul Blazer and Terranigma. Like, some of these we've played, some of them we haven't, but they're notorious games in retro catalogs. And then they tried the Nintendo 64. And with this, they made a bold choice here. I believe they started their development process before much was even known about the new era of consoles that were going to be coming out. But they at least knew enough to decide that they weren't going to do 3D. As the most of the market was moving towards 3D, they made the bold choice to stay 2D with this game.
Yeah, right. For clarity, as we jump to like development, Treasure is who developed this game. And yeah, everything you said about them is correct from my understanding.
Now, as Kenny just mentioned, because he thought that I may have said something wrong or gone too far, the game was developed, of course, by Treasure, who also developed Gunstar Heroes, which we played. But this game has less shooting and a lot more shaking. It's
a lot more grabbing.
It's the name of the game. You play as...
Mischief Makers.
You play as Marina Lightyears, the ultra intergalactic Cybot G, who is a robotic maid on a quest to rescue her creator who has been kidnapped by an evil empire.
Here's the deal.
That's her last name.
Can I just ask a very general question that's going to sound unfair?
For sure.
What's up with Japan?
Dude, what do you mean?
Just in general.
If you're asking that question, you're messing up.
I don't know. I asked that question a lot this week.
That is a very wacky idea. And not only that, like, like that's just the premise. And that's just where the wackiness, the weirdness begins. Yeah. It's only amplified, magnified as the game continues. The setup is that you are this robotic maid, and so instead of like running around shooting everything like you do in Gunstar Heroes, and I believe that's the one with the combining gun or like bullet weapons and the cool gun combinations. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
Sega title.
You don't have weapons in this game. Sure, there's a few times like you can pick up weapons and literally everything else.
Shake them.
Yeah, you shake everything, and on paper that sounds terrible, I think.
but then
for other people, you would have to play the game to see if that translates well. I know that when it came out, it had mixed average reviews, but what we're here to do today is to talk about the game, the good, the bad, the ugly, and talk about if it holds up to today's standards.
Well, what's interesting about the development of this game was, you're right, I'm pretty sure the development began before the N64 was officially released. Like, they knew of the console and it was going to be on it, but like, they didn't know the potential that the console would have and how like 3D would eventually be like the thing. So I think it's really brave of them to stick to the 2.5D style or 2D style. And also what's pretty cool is that Treasure, that development team, had pretty much exclusively worked with Sega. What's that game called? Gunstar Heroes was a Sega title. And the other games that they've made were on the Genesis. And so this was like their first jump into the Nintendo world. And I just thought that was kind of a interesting first for them.
Although my understanding is they subsequently said, nah, forget this.
and ran
back to developing for for other platforms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Gameplay.
So you're playing this character, Marina. By the way, I really love Marina and her personality. And it's you're grabbing, you're doing all these things, but it's a platformer. So first and foremost, like the way I would describe the game to someone who doesn't know it is that it's a left to right for the most part with a lot of variants.
Yes.
Like later on, it really gets crazy. But for the most part, it's your classic platformer, left to right, get to the end of the stage. And what is so jarring about starting this game, thinking, okay, platformer, cool, this seems really easy, it quickly turns into kind of a chaotic mess. At first, even in the first like tutorial stage, like if you go watch Kenny, I was kind of in the same boat. You start off in this semi-tutorial stage. It is a tutorial. There's nothing to harm
you. It's big time tutorial. Every single person you come in contact with tells you exactly what to do, and Kenny refuses to talk to them.
I don't think he knew how to.
I tried talking to him at first, it was unclear how.
It's right, but I think it tells you probably in one of the first conversations.
It does, and you skipped.
But no, I understand to some degree because the button configuration for what they went with in this game is completely contradictory to the majority of games on the Nintendo 64.
Because whatever they wanted and used the like entire controller, but in really weird ways. Like, yeah, you're going to have to hit every single one of these buttons, but not in ways that feel normal.
But like, here's the weird, really weird part. I'm an N64 veteran. I've played a lot of the catalog, and this is the only game, only one I know of, where the D-pad is used. Like, not only used, they want you to use it that way. It's encouraged. I actually looked up the guide that came with the box and was really sad because it was so quality and we don't have those anymore. But the pictures show you how to hold it and you're using the D-pad, not the joystick, which is counterintuitive. Oh, yeah.
You could almost forego the D-pad or even that, you know, the little toggle to move because the C buttons are, it's this really weird tech where the yellow C buttons on the Nintendo 64 is really just a second D-pad. And instead of just slow movements, though, it dashes you in certain directions. You can do it in the air. You can do it along the ground. You can do it and roll past enemies and different things like that. Yeah, you're doing this really weird setup where you're running around probably with your D-pad or the toggle or whatever, and then you're using your C buttons to do extra dashes while you're still trying to grab and shake everything with your core buttons there. And then, yeah, dialogue with the L and R bumpers.
Yeah, to be honest, it was like they were still on the Sega. They were like, no, we really like the Genesis controller. Well,
I'm going to go back to they started developing this game before they knew what the Nintendo 64 was.
Yeah. They were like, they saw the controller.
Let's just do this.
And they were like, oh no.
We won't do that.
And on the note of that movement, the movement options that you're talking about with the dashing, Dustin, that's probably my favorite part of the game is the movement and how they worked in Marina's movement in the game. So like you're not just like walking slowly or even running with the D-pad, you are dashing most of the time. And to me, it was reminiscent of Mega Man slides, honestly. Like I was constantly dashing on the ground, but then in midair as well. And so it really opens up your options and made me feel like I was playing almost like Smash Brothers, maybe.
It's foreign at first. Like it doesn't.
Oh, totally.
To do both of those y'all things, it's just so weird. Yeah. You got it immediately?
I mean, not immediately, but I didn't think of it as like, oh, this was a hurdle.
And that was going to be one of my questions. And I'm interested that you're going this direction because I would have thought that even for veteran platformers, which you are among, coming to this game, I would have thought that it's not just to pick it up and play and just be as good at it as you are with other platformers, but that there's this extra layer of difficulty in just trying to figure out the different mechanics, not only of the controller, but of this game. It's not just like destroy your enemies in front of you. It's grab onto all of these circular sad faces and shake it and then fling yourself and shake it and fling yourself. It's just weird.
I think I just early on had to decide, like, it wasn't your typical hold B to run faster kind of game. And when you get over that and you realize that air movement, like mid-air movement, is really important. Like, the hardest part was going from the C buttons to B button, like the grab button. And I wasn't using an N64 controller, by the way, this week, but the one I was using is close enough. And so moving your thumb from the dash buttons to a grab button was weird and awkward, but I don't know. I just quickly adapted to it. I thought it was pretty fun by the time I got the hang of it.
So we've talked a lot about the kind of primary mechanic, but you don't even really get that until a couple of levels in, because first you have to learn movement and you have to learn grabbing items and those things. But you quickly start just shaking and grabbing everything. We've mentioned this already, but I don't think that can be overstated as to how big that is in this game.
No, that's the mechanic, is grabbing.
From the beginning to the end, that is how you play this game. From the maneuvering around stages to ending stages to transitioning in between stages to fighting bosses, it's all grabbing. So your simple goal in each stage, for the most part, is to locate the star that beams you out of the stage.
Yeah, Kirby style. Right.
It's,
yeah.
It's a pretty typical progression. You've it got is Kirby like style.
Wait,
normal
typical
worlds that you're trying to move through to get to a boss.
No, you don't have normal worlds. Like, three levels in, you're on a theme park, and then a level later, you're on a Power Ranger like mech, and
sure,
then
like,
you're
weirdly themed, but the level progression is normal. You're doing platforming levels and then mini bosses and big bosses.
Yeah, the
sequence.
Premise is simple. You find the star. It's just the theme of the stages and the quirks of each stage start to get really Japanese,
right?
Back to what you were saying.
Oh, absolutely.
I disagree with you guys saying anything is normal about the progression in this game.
I mean,
yes, it's simple in that you get the star. I do like that you said Kirby, because that really is very comparable.
It's the same.
But I think that the layout and the level design, all of that is completely contrary to every other kind of platformer that I'm used to. You're not just fighting things and getting to the end of the stage. There's a lot of puzzle-like
Elements are cool. The variety is cool. It's tons of variety.
There's tons of variety. Not every stage is just get to the star. One of them is there's these enemies that just keep jumping on a platform and you have to survive a certain amount of time. Another is you're riding around on these tracks as you're holding on to these ball faces and moving from one ball to the next. Another is like kind of like a minecart stage. Another is a bot. So like there's so many different things here. So there's a lot of variety, which if that's what you're looking for in a game is good. But I didn't feel like this was a normal platformer by almost any degree of the word.
Oh no, it's completely abnormal. And if you're trying to picture this game, it's not only abnormal in the gameplay, which is super unique, but the look of these levels is also really abnormal. Imagine everything in the level made up of really weird, creepy, nightmare-inducing, sad faces. And I'm not just talking enemies, I'm talking like blocks and things you interact with and items that you shake, everything.
Everything, enemies, platforms, the tracks, everything is this sad, like, face with glowing eyes. That's the weirdest thing to me. What was that decision?
I don't know. The little mischief guys. Who's making mischief here anyways? Is it you or these little like minion knockoff things?
It's the Empire guys. Like, that's what I really liked about the game, actually, is that the game's not called Marina's Rescue or something. It's called Mischief Makers. It's about the little bad guys. So I thought that was kind of fun. But I think you're reading into too much of what we're saying, Dustin. I'm not saying it's normal. I'm saying that what you're trying to do is simple. You need to locate the star. Where it gets insane is like stage two, where the stage is no longer just straight left to right, and now you have to start looking at what's weird about what you're talking about, the faces on everything, is everything starts to look the same. And I was like, did I just walk past that block, or is that a new one? And I was getting lost, but the stages aren't big. They're actually kind of tiny, and that's a beef I have with the game, is that the first few stages, at least, in the first worlds, were too small. And I was like, well, that was kind of lame. But once I got to the lava stages, I really liked the dynamic on those, just where they're introducing some of the other, not mini games, but just like I guess puzzles is what y'all were saying, and that's the right word for it, where like one of them you're falling, it's like a falling stage and you're having to not hit the spiky balls and stay in the line. I really love the variety, but some of the stages were too short for me and too maze-like, like way too mazy.
Lots of exploration.
It is very mazy, lots of exploration. They are short stages. That didn't bother me because there's 52 levels.
Right, that's true. Yeah, there are five worlds.
You say that
of 10.
And it makes it sound like a long game. This is a short game.
You thought so?
It's not a long game, like, but I think on your first play, it's going to take 8 to 10
hours. I
don't
need it.
Yeah, but still, like, if somebody plays through well and quickly and just, like, knows the game, it's a sub 3 hour experience. Easy.
Really?
And might be bold. I'm bad at video games and it would have taken me 24 hours to beat this thing.
I wonder what the speed run is.
Like, it's not a long game at all. And this is, I know it's a 2.5D platformer, and so expectations are different, but this is competing with Nintendo 64 titles that like have hours and hours and hours of good gameplay.
That's a good point.
Fair. What you're saying, or what you had asked, Nolan, I think the speed run is a little over an hour.
That's cool to me. I was expecting it to be way lower and like glitchy, but that's kind of fun that it's almost an hour.
They just kind of, from what I watched some of it, they kind of just master the speed tech, like using the C buttons, canceling it with a grab, and then continuing to use that over and over again and quickly getting to the stars in each one. But the one that I watched is actually, so it might be quicker, but the one that I watched is all yellow diamond. Is that what they're called? That's probably not what they're called.
Oh, I bet that adds a lot of time.
All of the yellow crystals. Yeah. Kenny talked, you talked about like speed sum, and we've been talking about these different things. Each stage has a built-in time trial mode. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of each level, you get ranked like how well and how fast you did. And so S is the best, but you're probably not going to see that on a casual playthrough because it's like insane. I got a couple of A's actually, but the majority of mine were B, C's, D's. I think F is the worst probably, but you're speeding through these stages. And again, you're just trying to get to the star. However, on each stage or most stages, there's this yellow or gold crystal that is often hidden that you can do certain things. Sometimes it's intuitive, sometimes it's not, and uncover that. And those add up. And at the end of the game, based on how many you got, that's what kind of like ending sequence you get.
And you know, that reminds me of Donkey Kong Country. That seems like a Rare decision and I love it. And I didn't find them, I mean, at all. And in fact, I didn't know they existed until like I looked it up later. I think I got
it,
one
it
on
it tells
accident.
You at one point, like, hey, watch out for these things in the game, but it's not like you have to choose to do them.
Well, I love that there's that factor, because obviously you're not going to get them all the first playthrough, but there's a reason to play through again and try to like S all the stages and get all the yellow things or whatever. So I really love that. And it reminded me of Rare, which is obviously Nintendo's like go-to third party developer. But another thing about the gameplay that we have to talk about that definitely reminded me of Rare were the boss fights. Did y'all like the boss fights? You obviously liked them, right?
I was very glad that they were as unique as they were, and that bosses weren't just like boring and straightforward. Bosses to me make or break a platformer like this to a large degree, just because there's so much repetition and you need something unique and challenging to break it up. And I didn't get through the entire game, but the couple of big bosses I did fight were fun and unique.
I thought they were so good. I really liked it wasn't the final boss of World 2. It was like there are some mini bosses, I guess you'd call them.
Are you thinking the bumblebee that you liked?
The bee, yeah. I love that fight. It's like you're on a platform and there's lava on both sides of you and you're fighting a bee and you're grabbing his head, but you are trying to dodge the stinger and he releases like smaller bees.
The final boss there was really funny too, grabbing the like lava dragon's hand and like punching him with it. Like, stop hitting yourself.
They're surprisingly quality fights. Dustin, what'd you think?
Boss fights were where this game shined, in my opinion. That like pretty cool boss fights, almost every single one of them. I didn't care for the snake-ish boss fight up front, mm-hmm. but Kenny, I think you mentioned it. You said it's the final boss. It's the final boss, like,
of when you two.
Save
of
your...
World 2. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But not the... like, you save doctor, but then it's like the all these new enemies get released. Yeah. But yeah, that's the best one. You're fighting this dragon and his dad, by the way, and
it's so funny.
The dragon throws punches at you and you have to catch the fist and toss it either at the dragon's face or at his dad, and you have to beat both of them. They're two separate bosses, but they're fighting you together. It is interesting. If I'm not gonna have a weapon and I'm not even gonna be able to punch people, making the boss hit itself in the face, yeah, that's the way to go.
So good. I didn't expect boss fights, by the way. The world I should have with like the way that the world structure is 1, 2, 3, like, or 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3. Naturally, there's a boss, but like when the first one happened, like the first mini boss, I was like, oh, that's unique and fun.
It didn't really catch me off guard. Before I even knew that this was the same company that developed Gunstar Heroes, I felt Gunstar Hero vibes.
Really?
Oh, Treasure, I think, is one of the most unique, like, distinct styles.
Like,
even though this one,
feeling,
to me, felt a little different with the N64 and, like, the graphics look slightly different and the buttons don't feel quite the same. Like, when you load it up, if you've played Treasure games before, you go, oh, man, this is a Treasure title. Like, they have a very distinct look and tone and sound and visual, at least during this era, that 100% is just them.
Aged. I'm not mad that they went 2D.
Like, heck no.
I don't think that's a bad idea, even in Nintendo 64. Like, early 3D Nintendo 64, for the most part, wasn't the best, you know?
Hey, no, it wasn't.
No,
it wasn't. I'm not mad from a gameplay point of view at all. I think the wise decision, if you're trying to make money at the time, was to probably do a good 3D game, just because that's what was new and novel and felt unique. And, like, use the controller like it's supposed to be on a 64. But if you just want to make a game that's fun and do it on the latest console, and I've got no problem with you doing a 2.5D here.
Well, you know, it made me wish that N64 had more 2D platformers. It has, like, none.
Yeah, that being said, this is only like a slight, like, graphically and how it handles and all that. I feel like they didn't take full, you know, range of the Nintendo 64 capabilities, because this really feels like a Sega Genesis game. Like, there are a few things that are more impressive probably. And one of the cool things is you don't have loading screens for the most part at all outside of between stages. But you get a lot of that in Nintendo 64, right? But with going 2D here, I thought that the style and the colors and even the kind of 3D backgrounds, I felt like all of that looked pretty nice.
Definitely. Like, they did a couple of things that the N64 could do that, like, I don't know, the Genesis couldn't. I mean, a lot of things, but like one noticeable thing for me was, I don't remember what stage it was. I think we're still in World 2 on this one, but it's the one where you're climbing and the camera is like shaking, but also like tilting in a weird way, and gives you weird perspective on, like, as you're climbing, and a sense of urgency. That was definitely like console.
Yeah, that's not Genesis
being utilized, but I get what you're saying for sure. Like, it looks so fun and good, and I wish it would have had more notoriety when it came out.
While I applaud them for being different in the graphic department than what a lot of people were doing with Nintendo 64 at the time, I still find significant problems with the controls. I don't applaud them for going so different on the controls. I think that this is one of the steepest learning curves that you're going to get in video games, especially if you're pre-programmed with this is how you use the Nintendo 64 controller.
Absolutely.
And that one is already hard to emulate today because you don't really have N64 USB. I'm sure maybe it's out there, but I don't.
Yeah, I'm sure they exist. But regardless, especially if you're playing on a generic controller and especially because of the fact that they utilized so many buttons on the controller, but in such unique ways.
Unique.
And
that's
then
nice.
They didn't use some of the normal things. So if you're thinking, well, it's just going to feel like a normal Nintendo 64 game, so let me set up my button configuration in a, you know, similar to way to what normally works, it's either going to feel really janky, or you're going to have to kind of reset things up in a way that takes into account what it was trying to get you to do initially, with the C-pad being the kind of secondary D-pad, and with the actual D-pad, and with the use of all the buttons. And so I agree, it was a big hurdle this week for me.
Wrong. I think y'all are wrong. I actually applaud them for being different, just because, like, be different, try things. And I didn't feel the hurdle like y'all did so hard. I thought it was easy enough to get used to.
I think it takes hours to get a hang of. Huh. And I felt better by the end of the week, but I never felt godlike. And when you play platformers for multiple hours, you want to get at least the movement down. And I was still struggling by the end of the week. Maybe I just suck, but I attribute at least some of it to the different route they went with controls.
I'm also curious how you guys felt about, like, music and sound, because it's bold and crazy and unique and different, and kind of sort of fits the tone of the rest of the game. But because of that, I feel like people have a love-hate thing going on here. One, you have some really bold, brash, interesting music. And then two, you have some really heavy-handed and repeated
voice
sound effects, including that
stop!
Shake.
Shake, shake, and stop! Almost every stage she comes, those, drops in saying stop.
I loved both of those things.
You did?
Like, so much, yes.
I thought sound mixing was abysmal. I thought the voices sounded like they were recorded in a closet with a walkie-talkie. I thought the explosions were so loud and sometimes lasted the majority of the stage where I couldn't even hear the voices at times. I thought the music was okay. Like, it did fit, but it just, I don't remember any of them. None of them stuck with me. They didn't move me in any way.
What stuck with me was when you beat a stage, the little, like, it's not a track, it's a chime that it plays when you beat it. Yeah. And I liked it a lot. Like, it made me feel good for beating the stage. I don't know. I feel very different. I loved her voice acting. I thought, even though it was the same, shake, shake, and stop, I don't know. Every time she did it, I was like, yeah.
Where do you land, Kenny? You've got to land somewhere. It can't be the middle.
Oh, he's going to say middle.
100% I'm in Dustin's camp on this one. Every time she shook, I wanted to put my hands around her neck and then shake.
You can't
harm her. It was obnoxious.
She's so good.
It's not for me. It's not like that she has that catchphrase. I think that's fine. It's cute. Whatever. You can even do it time and time again. Eventually, it's going to drive me insane. But I just thought the quality of those things, the sounds department wasn't up to par, especially compared to some of those Nintendo 64 games, dude.
If she was in Fire Emblem, she'd be waifu status.
Oh my gosh. She's a robot maid.
You'd take her to tea?
Oh yeah, I'd take her to tea in a heartbeat.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Nolan, why do you like this game so much?
Because it's very unique for the N64's catalog. I remember seeing the cover art at Video Giant when I went to rent games. I never rented it, but I should have, because it's a platformer on the N64. Like, done. I can't really name many others, like Yoshi games, but those were not good. And I just love platformers, and I thought it was, it's weird. It's very, like, Japanese in theme and style, but it's treasure, and it shows. Like, they make quality games. So I definitely, definitely recommend it to people. Even with maybe some of the controller hurdles that you might run into, I think once you get over them, you end up with, like, an extremely fun platformer with exciting boss fights, unique stages, a lot of cool puzzles, and Kenny said it early, but the biggest selling point for me was the variety. I was never bored. So, New Game Plus for sure.
All right, I'll jump in.
You don't have to jump in. Just do it, buddy.
I'm jumping.
I don't want you to jump in every single episode.
Both feet. Okay. So here's the thing, Nolan. You're right. It's got tons of variety. You're right. It feels like treasure, and usually they make super excellent games. But this game was just too much for me. Not only in learning curve, which is steeper than in a lot of platforms, and in the hurdle of controllers, which we already talked about that a little and was a real problem, but just in everything. Like, if you like a frowny face, like, put one in. Not 4,000. Like, if you like a cute little minion, like, throw a few of them. Don't drown me in them. There was some very unique things about the gameplay here. I like that they tried to have a unique mechanic with the whole, like, grab and interact with things instead of just shoot a gun or whatever. That's always welcome to me.
Can I interrupt you really quick?
I don't know if it was just tone or if it was just they were trying so hard to be out of the box that I didn't feel welcome in the box anymore. It was just I didn't like this game and it was just too much and no new game plus.
The humor didn't do anything for you? We didn't talk about this much, but the first stage is called Meet Marina. The second stage is called Meet Karina, and it's just one of them in dressed up as her.
Yeah, they tried really hard, but it didn't land.
It's so funny. Okay.
I like the Bumblebee boss. I'll agree with you on that.
Oh, goodness.
That's Dustin. One yes, one no. I've got the power.
Please hook me up.
And I'm going to make a lot of people angry.
Because you know what's up.
No.
I completely respect the opinions of others, so I hope they respect the opinions of mine.
I don't.
I haven't disliked a game as much as this one in a long time.
No, really?
We're so much closer. I thought it would be at least close for you.
Wait.
No. I loved Gunstar Heroes. Retrospect. It was fast-paced. It was intuitive. It was fluid. It was fun. And this game is the opposite in all of those categories. It is much slower. It is unintuitive. It is disjointed. They tried to do so many things, and with that did most of them poorly in my like in my opinion. The humor, they do try a lot of it. It didn't work for me. I didn't laugh nor giggle. Not a once. I just had a look of confusion on my face the majority of the week. I had to force myself to keep coming back to it just to get in the gameplay. Thankfully, I got through a few of the worlds and started getting the handling down a little bit more, because if we would have recorded this, you know, Tuesday of this past week or just a couple of days in and I'm still learning the mechanics, it would have been a lot rougher of an episode. I respect what they try to do. I'm all for doing something different. I'm all for 2D in a 3D world. I'm all for a lot of the color and what they're trying to do. I just don't think that it connected, and I don't think it's a good game.
Yeah, you're completely right. I had as many frowny faces this week as there were frowny faces in the levels.
That's one of the things that just annoyed me the most. That is a gross design element.
Why? Oh, it was. It really,
really.
I'm with you. It really rubbed me the wrong way, cool. too.
Whether you agree or not, Mischief Makers is not New Game Plus certified.
That's ridiculous, but okay. What'd they say?
There's going to be people that are a lot more mad than you.
I'm going to be with them, too.
But here's the thing. If they look, I think the majority of the people that like this game have experience with it when they were younger.
Not me?
Okay, great. I know, not you, but I think you're going to be in the minority there. Even in reading about game... When it came out, even it was mixed appeal. Like
Stop!
There was, it was, and so I think that the people that like it largely like it because of their connection to it when they were younger.
Shake.
And I don't think that it holds up today. I already said that. I've already done my piece. What do you guys think? We did have a couple write in. Two people that just gushed about it all week long. Astral Soul said, this game is super nostalgic for me. I rented this game as a kid and loved it so much that I rented it a second week in a row and I beat it. I played through it at least a dozen times since then and is still to this day one of my favorite N64 titles. It's a weird game for sure, but it has a ton of charm. It also has the unique privilege of being one of the few 2D platformers on the system. And personally, I think it's the best one of the bunch. Mm-hmm. The graphics look good, the music is often catchy and fits the levels well. The gameplay may take some getting used to at first, but offers a unique control style. Shake, shake! The bosses were all, nope, he's not done. I don't know why he threw in shake there, but the bosses were all creative and challenging. The story was strange and but fun, and each level offered something new. I really hope you guys kept an open mind and enjoyed this gem of a game.
Here's the thing. When you listen to all the things he says...
You don't get to say anything. This is between me and who said that?
No.
Astral Soul.
I agree with almost everything he said about it, except for the fact that it was a good game.
Listen, it was definitely a renter. I get that for sure. I even mentioned that before you said that. But you know what was litty AF? When you rented a game and on N64 specifically because you didn't have memory cards and your file was still there and no one deleted it and you could start where you left off.
What?
Anyways.
Like you could come back to it at a later time?
Yeah, like the files are saved on the cartridge on N64 on most. Yeah, so.
But where was your game store?
Video Giant. Arkansas.
What was the address? You said it every other time in the past. You didn't say Video Giant. You always gave the address, and that was a funny running thing that you don't even remember.
I don't know the address. I made it up if I did.
No, you... anyways.
Oh, West Fifth Street.
Oh, Andrew, you made it up.
You know.
Both of y'all can't talk. Let me read the next one.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Hold on. Garlisle said, is it flawless? No. It's rough around the edges, the controls take some getting used to, the difficulty is incredibly spiky, and in its many crazy varied levels, it was inevitable there'd be some unfun ones.
A lot of
that, yep.
That said, it is one of my favorite N64 titles. Is it one of my favorite N64 titles? It's my first time. Yes, it's really goofy, and the gameplay feels really good after you get over that initial learning bump. In an era that was latching onto 3D development and genre formulas, this game just went and did whatever it wanted, leading to something that still feels unique and defies conventions. Mm-hmm. Even after all these years, I still had fun revisiting it this week, dashing wildly through levels and dueling really fun bosses. To those listening at home, I highly suggest you give this game a shake. Thanks, Garlisle. I agree.
Kenny, what do you think?
Don't talk.
I mean, the first half of his email is right.
I hate you.
Here's what I do love. When someone loves a game so much that we're playing as our retro game of the week, that they spend the week playing it and even stream it. So Garlisle did a lot of that this week. I believe that one night he streamed the entire game.
Well,
and
that's awesome.
So I got to stop and watch some. I went back even as I was trying to gather my thoughts and notes and watch some. It's fun even if I don't see eye to eye watching someone find joy in this game. And I think honestly, that's what I would rather do with this game. Watch someone play it rather than play it myself.
It's also one of those that like I don't feel offended that people like it because I think there's definitely some like theoretical charm. It just really, really didn't connect with me.
No.
Like gameplay or anything else. So like I'm okay with people liking this game and I get it. It's not like you're wrong in this case, but it's a bad game and I never want to play it again.
I think on the other end, the people that really like it are going to think that we are wrong and that's not and
so absolutely.
Thank you guys for writing in your thoughts. As always, if you want to submit your commentary for the Retro Game of the Week and have it read live on air, feel free to email ngppodcast@gmail.com, or you can just visit our website, Discord, submit your commentary by the end of the week, and we'd love to include it as a part of our show. For now, thankfully, we're going to put aside Miss Chife Makers and we are going to randomly select the next retro game of the week from our glorious retro master list. Randomizing now. Ooh. For the next 7 days, we're going to be playing an action role-playing game for the Super Nintendo.
Okay. Action role-playing, what?
But it was released by Square.
Oh,
what?
And it came out in 1995.
Oh,
and the game is called Secret of Evermore.
Oh, wow. That's supposed to be a really big one, huh? Never played it.
I mean, I've heard the name. I've never played it before, and I love RPGs.
Yeah, so like in my mind, I always confuse that game, Secret of Mana, and Illusion of Gaia. And we've played two of those games, so this will be like me being able to finally know what it is.
The player guides the boy and his shape-shifting dog through Evermore? Yeah, okay, new game plus. I mean, that's easy, right?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
I do like that there's a dog.
Despite similar game mechanics and a similar title, it's not part of the Mana series or the Mana series. Interesting. Anyways, find a copy of Secret of Evermore this week and play it along with us.
Join us in our Discord server and talk about that game and Mischief Makers, please. I need your help. Go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord.
We want to say a big thank you to all of you who support us on patreon.com. You guys are great. Extra big shout out to Cecil for joining us as a patron for the first time this week. We're super appreciative and want to give a big shout out to all of our producer level supporters,
yes,
who are some of our favorite people in the whole world, behind probably our wives and maybe our bosses
and each other. Who bosses. Are they, Kenny?
And each other.
Bosses.
And this week in alphabetical order.
Who likes their bosses?
Yeah, what the heck?
You gotta screw cover your bases. You don't want to get
just
fired.
In case they're listening.
Absolutely. You never know.
I think he really believes that.
So a big
that,
thanks.
Love you, Aaron.
To Molly. Antonin, Ben, Bill, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Grim, Corey, Maxima, Zach, and Zion, as well as everybody else that we also like that I've aforementioned listed.
Like our bosses.
And
especially thank you just to all of you that have been giving. We are reaching our final goal that we set up when we started this, not the podcast, but when we started Patreon a year into the lifespan of the podcast. We are coming up on our fourth birthday?
Four.
It's going to be fourth anniversary soon, and we're going to hit 200 episodes soon.
Yes.
We've done over 200 pieces of content.
Well, yeah,
but
I mean
proper
like 200
episodes.
Like episodes proper.
Right.
And so that's going to be a big deal. But with that coming up and with us getting very close to hitting our final goal, we just today added three new milestone stretch goals and some benefits, some things that we can receive as a community if we hit those goals. Now, the very next one is still the most important one of all. It's D&D. A D&D one shot with Kenny Nolan and myself.
Oh man, I'm so looking forward to that.
It'll be fun.
Hey, I just started a comic that I'll have to tell you about off air where these five kids play D&D, get sucked into the world, and then they get out 2 years later, but one of them is left in there. Now, 25 years later, they're brought back into the game to face
their friend
they
left behind.
Dude,
that sounds so good.
I got to tell you about it later. You should check it out if you're a comic reader. It's called Die, because that's a single dice. Oh, my gosh.
He's
into
it.
He's into
it,
clearly.
Go check us out at patreon.com/NGP podcast, and you can find out more information and see those goals and see how you can get bonus additional content on a regular basis. You can also check us out. Nope. What?
You're good.
No. What?
Go ahead, do your ending spiel. I won't interject.
You can also check us out on our social media at Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast, our YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. Seriously, that helps us. If you haven't done that yet, open up iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating if you think we deserve it, and a little text review. We'll appreciate you forever. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Secret of Evermore. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
We're also on Instagram, NGP Podcast.
And this has been an extremely truthful and honest episode of New Game Plus.